You might want to turn your Bibles to the book of Hebrews chapter 11. We're going to be looking at Abraham, not just this Wednesday night, but next Wednesday night as well. I've kind of got part one next Wednesday night. It was going to be Mike, but I think he's kind of talked Chad into doing part two on Abraham. So I'm going to take early part of Abraham, and then Chad will take the second part next Wednesday. So I kind of promised Chad that I would leave him some of the good parts, so I'll do that. Look at Hebrews chapter 11, verses 8 and 9. And I want to make some introductory remarks before we actually get into some of my prepared material here. It says, by faith, Abraham obeyed. And I want to stop that right there. And I make just a couple of quick introductory remarks. It's always amazed me when you begin to talk to people within the religious world. And when I talk about the religious world, I'm talking about the denominational world. When you begin to talk to them about what it means to be saved and what it takes to be saved. And one of the things that I've noticed, and it's been a recent TV ad has come out with Franklin Graham on it, in which he is telling people what they need to do in order to be right with God. And he tells them to say the sinner's prayer. And that's all he tells them. And it just stops right there. Now, well, you can call this number, by the way, and you'll have somebody also pray with you about this, too. And it's amazed me how many times people will do that, and they never realize that there is a part that we must play in our own salvation. But I want you to notice again what it says. By faith, Abraham obeyed. Biblical faith always involves our obedience to God's will. Biblical faith always causes us to do what God said to do. And we could develop that more by saying, not only does it say, does it teach us that biblical faith teaches us that we'll do what God said to do, but also in the way that God said to do it. But we won't go beyond that. But it's always amazed me how people will stop right there. Well, biblical, just believe that Jesus is the Son of God and you're saved. And if you really want to ever look at that and help somebody see, just go to the book of Hebrews. And sometimes it doesn't say it just quite so explicitly as this, but in this particular case it does. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. You see, Abraham obeyed the will of God. Abraham did what God told him to do. So let's look into the life of Abraham, and let's take a look at this life. It's an amazing life, and again, I'm going to only cover an early part of this amazing part of his life, and we're going to actually take a look at some of the failures of Abraham as well, but we'll get to that here in just a moment. Hebrews chapter 11, verses 8 and 9. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place which he would receive as an inheritance. And he went out, notice, and he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise, as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. You know, one of the three sons of Terah, his original name, Abram, meant what? Father of height. A father of height. In other words, this picture here of somebody who was almost to the point of being looked upon as being majestic or of great height. Abram was given his new name, Abraham, when God would renew this promise of a great progeny, this great multitude that would follow him. We'll talk about that in just a minute. We find that in Genesis chapter 12, 1 and 2. We find it again in Genesis chapter 17, 5 through 9. Now, truly, Abraham's place in biblical history is really very unique. His life is a landmark of a tested and a victorious faith. He had a truly tested faith, and we're only going to talk about a little bit of that tonight. He was chosen by God to become the father of a new spiritual race. The first leader of a mighty, mighty host of God's elect people. Stop and think about that for just a moment. But back up again to Hebrews chapter 11, 8 and 9, and look at what's being said about him. He went out not knowing where he was going. I want you to stop and think about the kind of faith that required of this man. How many of us would have had that kind of faith? When God said, I want you to go somewhere, and we'll talk about this more in just a little bit, but you know what went through my mind in this day and age in 2020? Get out my phone. Okay, God, got my MapQuest open. I'm ready. Tell me where to go. Give me an address here, and I'll plug it in, and I'm ready to go. Guess what? No iPhone, no Android, no MapQuest. Not even the old-fashioned map that you unfolded. Remember those? Some of you do and some of you don't. Some of you too young to remember those. But guess what? We had old-fashioned map, paper maps. You get them out, put them up on the dash of your car, and you looked at them like that. Okay, I know where I'm kind of going. Sometimes you even get a highlighter. You know, you kind of traced out where you're going. Yep, hit Highway 12 here, take out that one. You hit Highway 67, get out there. And that's where how you got to your destination. Now, throw the paper map away because he didn't have that either. Because you see, God didn't even tell him where he was going to go. And yet he was ready to go. He went out not even knowing where he was going to go. And when you look at the early parts of Abraham's life, the best we know about him, by the way, really doesn't even pick up until he's about 70. I think I've got that in my notes in here in just a moment. But he was probably a pretty wealthy man. He gathers up all of his stuff, all of his possessions, and he takes out and he leaves a place of prosperity. And he doesn't even have a clue where he's going. God said, I'll set you on the right course. And in essence, how we might think of it today, I'll tell you when you get there. Yes.
So Jesus in Matthew 18:3, and then again in 19:14, compares the kingdom of heaven to being inhabited by those like children, people that are like children.
Right.
And when I tell my kids, get in the car, we got to go, they just get in the car. It's rare that they're like, well, where are we going? Sometimes they do, and I'll either answer them or I'll just say, you'll see when we get there. And that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But they have complete faith that I'm not going to lead them off a cliff. I'm not going to throw them out of the car, you know, while it's moving. They have faith in me as a parent. And God even tells the Israelites that he is going to be a father to them and they shall be his children. He calls them the children of Israel.
Right.
And a lot of times we take those verses in Matthew to only mean innocent, you know, children are innocent. But they're also humble and they're trusting. They trust those who are in superior roles.
Okay. That's good. That's good analysis. That's good. Good way to looking at that. Here we have the trust, and that's involved in faith, isn't it? You know, that's kind of, when you stop and look at the word faith, that really kind of is the very core of faith. We're putting our faith, we're putting our trust in God. And that's what Abraham did. He trusted God. And you know, where am I going, God? I'll tell you when I get there. You know, as a kind of a humorous side note, sometimes we put our kids in the car and they say, well, where are we going? Well, you know, you'll know when we get there. I'll tell you when we get there, kind of mindset. If it's a very long trip, you said, well, you know, they trust that I'm not going to throw them out. If it's a very long trip, after they've asked you about a dozen times, are we there yet? You're about ready to throw them out. But you don't, do you? Because you love them, you're ready, you know. But the point being is they have their trust in you to get them there safely. Well, that's exactly what Abraham had in God. That's a good point. So Abraham is a unique individual. He's a very unique individual in the history of God's people from the very beginning to current times. You know, you stop and think about Abraham in a lot of ways. There was nothing, I don't think, noticeably from the scriptures, let's put it that way, special about Abraham necessarily for God to call on him to this role of distinction. You know, except the fact that God knew the character of Abraham. God knew who Abraham was. He knew the character of Abraham and the kind of faith that Abraham would have. And certainly he looked upon Abraham with the favor that he had toward Abraham. Because of the great detail given to us of Abraham's life later on, we know him as we know few others in the Bible. We do know he is from the Ur of Chaldees. He spoke no prophecies. We don't have anything that he wrote. He wrote no special psalms, songs. He didn't write a book that we're aware of, at least. Certainly can't find anything, nor was he given any law from God. It's not like Moses, anything like that. But you know what we do find in Isaiah chapter 41 and verse 8? And this is really important. Isaiah 41 verse 8. God spoke to Israel, or of Israel rather, as the descendants of, listen, Abraham, my friend. Stop and think about that for just a moment. There are a lot of things that you can find in the Bible, I have found to be true, that it wouldn't be bad that when our time on earth is up, that you could find that you wouldn't mind have written or engraved on your headstone. There are a lot of great things that you could find on there. But you know what? That wouldn't be bad, would it? Eric, wouldn't that be a pretty great thing to have?
Yes, sir.
Where it said, you know, Eric was the friend of God. That'd be a pretty good thing, wouldn't it?
Yes, sir.
Not bad, Dustin. Not bad. Who wouldn't want something like that to be able to be actually truthfully stated that you were the friend of God? And so you look at this, and though you look at the life of Abraham, there's a lot written about him. When you look at him, that one thing just jumped off the pages of the scriptures at me. Abraham, my friend. God said that. Wouldn't be bad. I wouldn't mind having that if it could be truthfully said. Yes?
In Genesis 18:19, it says, for I have known him.
Okay. Genesis 18:19.
He knew that he would lead his family to God to do his righteousness.
Okay.
And
He says, "For I have known him in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they may keep the way of the Lord." Okay, to do what? Righteousness and justice. Okay, so that's a pretty powerful thing too to be said. So let's look at Abram's family and early years. And I've got to stay within the early years framework here. As I said, the truth is we don't really know a lot about him until Abraham, I'll keep referring to him primarily as Abram right now, until he was 70 years old. We know that his father, Terah, and we have to go outside of Genesis, we have to go outside of this time frame, worshipped idols. We know that from Joshua chapter 24 and verse 2. Now, let's stop there and just think about this for just a moment. We oftentimes hear that we are a product of our environment, don't we? We hear that so often. Well, they're just a product of their environment. And yet we know that his father, Terah, worshipped idols. But Abraham was a worshiper of Jehovah. What does that tell me? I don't have to be a product of my environment. I don't have to be. Have we ever known somebody? And I bet you we have. I just imagine we all have. Who was raised in a very good, God-fearing home, who chose not to stay with God. They chose not to be a product of their environment. We probably all have known somebody like that. You see, we do have a choice in things. We make choices every day. And so we raise that point. What caused Abram to search out, to find, and to worship Jehovah? Why? When God called him, and again, I think we understand that God, knowing the good heart of Abram, chose him, called him. What made Abram decide that this is who I want to follow after? I don't know that we have the total answer. I'm not sure that even in my study and preparing for this, that I could come up with a concrete answer for that. I don't know if there's anything in the scriptures that point blank says, here's the key factor right here. Maybe somebody in their thought processes and their studies on this man's life could say, hey, here's what I found somewhere back down the line, and this may be it. But whatever it was, I think we can all say this much. We sure can be thankful for the life of Abram. We can be thankful that he did because of his life and because of his choice to follow after God when God said, hey, I want you to leave this land and to follow because I've got a great promise for you. A great inheritance for you, a great promise of a great multitude of people that we're going to talk about here in just a moment. I think we can be thankful because you know what that led to ultimately? What we are today. I mean, literally, thousands of years ago, that great promise that God made Abraham produced a great spiritual people that exists today. And I think we can be thankful for that. What else do we know about him, family-wise? Two brothers, Haran and Nahor. We find that in Genesis chapter 11. Terah and his father and Haran, his brother, died before Abram. We don't know about Nahor. Abram, to be called by God, I think, indicates that he followed God rather than the gods of his father. He didn't want to do that. But let's talk about this call of Abram, because this is interesting. Turn in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 11. And notice in verse 31, because I found this to be interesting. In verse 31, Genesis 11, in verse 31, and it says here, and Terah took his son Abram and his grandson Lot, the son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, his son Abram's wife, and they went out with them from the Ur of Chaldeans to go to the land of Canaan, and they came to Haran and dwelt there. Now let's just stop there for just a moment. Then notice what it says in chapter 12, verse 1. Now the Lord had said to Abram, get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house to the land that I will show you. Does that sound like there's a contradiction there? Does it sound like there's a bit of a contradiction? First it says Terah took his son Abram, and then it says the Lord had said to Abram to get out. Any thoughts on that?
I'll take it from your family.
Hold on.
Maybe God's providence.
Okay, there's a thought. I heard something else. Not that. Okay, here's what went through my mind as I was working on this. I was thinking along these lines here. Okay, who was still technically the patriarch of this family? Terah was. He was still alive. He was Abram's father. But who had God given the charge to? Because notice what it says in chapter 12, verse 1. Now the Lord had, that is past tense, he had already said to Abram, get out of your country. So it shouldn't surprise us that it says that Terah took his son Abram and his grandson and his son Haran and the daughter-in-law Sarah out of the land of Ur of the Chaldees. So it's not a contradiction. It's just that Terah was still the patriarch, but God had told Abram already, you need to get out. So was it possible that Abram had gone to Terah and said, we have to leave because God said, Jehovah has said, we've got to get out. It's time for us to leave. We need to leave this land. And I'm going to follow God. And Terah agreed that it was time to go. Whatever the case may be, I just thought that was a curious thing there. Whatever the case may be, Abram said, it's time for us to go. Now, Abram did not just receive this promise from God, but a revelation from God. Notice what it says. Continue to read with me. In chapter 12, verse 1 and 2, he says there, get out from your country, from your family, and from your father's house to a land I will show you. Now here's the promise and here's the revelation. And I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. And in you, all of the families of the earth shall be blessed. There's that promise or that revelation that's going to come through all people, or from him to all people. The land was promised, Genesis chapter 12, if you read that, continue to read on verse 7. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your descendants I will give this land. And there he built an altar to the Lord, who had appeared to him. And then it was confirmed in Genesis chapter 13, if you read in verses 14 and 15, it says, and the Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him, lift your eyes now and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward. For all the land which you see, I give to you and your descendants forever. So there is this promise back here, and now it's confirmed. And more specifics are actually given in chapter 15 that we don't have time to look at. Then in Genesis chapter 13, if you continue to read verses 16 through 17, and Genesis 15, 4 through 5, it records the promise of the multitude of Abram's descendants. How are they defined for us? Does anybody remember how he defines that for us? It's defined for us? Say again. Okay. The dust and the stars. That's how it's defined for us about the multitude of Abram's descendants. Have y'all been paying attention to this meteor? A meteor you're supposed to be able to see? Comet you're supposed to be able to see. Well, we haven't seen it yet. I think it's hiding behind the houses in our neighborhood. But when you go out right now, and there are no clouds in the sky right now, there's high pressure domes over the top of us, and it's pretty much got everything blocked out about that time of night. You can't see anything. But if you're kind of out in the country, not under all these lights in town, boy, can you ever see the stars right now? And stop and think about if you get out into some of these areas that they talk about no light pollution. Places out in extreme West Texas, the Big Bend area. And there are absolutely there's no light from houses and cities and stuff out there. And you can just see just copious numbers of stars. It's just unbelievable. Dust. We all get that in West Texas, don't we? We understand dust out here. When that wind kicks up, we understood dust when that Saharan dust came over. Okay? When you stop and think about that, and that's how Abraham's descendants were going to be defined, if you will, given to him, like stars and dust. In other words, beyond comprehension, the numbers. And you stop and think about, he wasn't just talking about a physical number there. He's talking about a spiritual number. The spiritual number. So there's all these promises that are given to Abraham. By Abraham obeying God, think about what was transpiring. These promises that were given to him, Abraham gave up something that was certain, something that was tangible in the land that he lived in, the Ur of the Chaldees. He had something that he could put his hand on, he could touch, he could see. It was everything was right there in front of him. He gave up that which was certain for uncertainty. God did not just give Abram his final destination. Abram exchanged the seen for the unseen. Now, think about that from a spiritual perspective today. Isn't that really what we are striving for today? Here is the scene. This is the world we live in. Everything is here. We can touch it. We can see it. We can smell it. We can taste it. We can hear it. All of our senses come into play. We have all of these things available to us. But aren't we looking for a different home than what we have here? Aren't we more than willing to exchange that we can touch here today for something that is beyond this? That's what he was doing. He was willing to exchange something that he had certainty in for something that he didn't have certainty in. He had, in fact, uncertainty in. He was willing to exchange that which he had ability to see and touch and all of this for something that he couldn't see and touch. Well, folks, that's what Christianity is about. He's a great pattern for that. Abraham is a tremendous pattern for that. I'm really watching this clock up here because I'm going to run out of time. I was afraid I was going to do this. I may have to just kick Chad out for next week. No, I wouldn't do that. But let's talk for just a real quick moment here, and this will have to be really quick. Turn in your Bibles very quickly to the book of Genesis chapter 12 if you've turned away from there. And let's talk for just a moment about Abraham's faith failing. And we don't have time to do a real in-depth here. We have two great examples here. And the reason I wanted to do this is because sometimes what we do, if we are not careful, is and especially if you look at, you look at Hebrews chapter 11, and these are kind of the heroes of the faith, aren't they? We kind of look up to these people and go, man, look at this and look at this and look what Abraham did. Look what he, and we kind of want to put these people up on kind of a pedestal and all this. But let's not forget that these were people. And the reason that we have them there are to see their accomplishments, but also to see that these people were just humans too. And you know what? If they could overcome their weaknesses, guess what I can do? I can overcome my weaknesses too. Where their faith failed and they could then overcome that, guess what I can do? And how many of us here could not? Now, I'm not asking you to raise your hand. Okay. I will. I don't mind doing it because there have been times that my faith has failed. Okay. I'm not proud of that. I'm just telling you it's a fact. If they could do it, so let's not, if they could overcome it, so can I. So that's what I want to focus in on for this short little bit of time we have here. Abraham had times where his faith failed. Look at Genesis chapter 12, verses 10 and following. It says there, now there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to dwell there, for the famine was severe in the land. And it came to pass when he was close to entering Egypt that he said to Sarah, his wife, indeed I know that you're a woman of beautiful countenance. Therefore it will happen when the Egyptians see you that they will say, this is his wife, and they will kill me, but they will let you live. Please say that you are my sister, that it may be well with me for your sake, that I may live because of you. So it was, when Abram came into Egypt, that the Egyptians saw the woman, that she was very beautiful. And the princes of Pharaoh also saw her and commended her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken to Pharaoh's house. He treated Abram well for her sake. He had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male and female servants, female donkeys and camels. But the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. And Pharaoh called Abram and said, what is this that you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister? I might have taken her as my wife. Now, therefore, here is your wife. Take her and go your way. So Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away with his wife and all that he had. Somebody said, well, what's wrong with that? Well, it was a failure of his faith. Look at chapter 20 very quickly. And we're going to be hard pressed to cover this in a very in-depth way. Don't have time to do that. But it happens again. A similar situation happens again, this time with the king of Abimelech. And it says in chapter 20 and verse 1, Abram and Abraham journeyed from there to the south and dwelt between Kadesh and Shur and stayed in Gerar. Now Abraham said to Sarah, now remember, now we've had a name change here with both of them, Abraham and Sarah, his wife. She is my sister. And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, "And indeed you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is a man's wife." But Abimelech had not come near her and said, "Lord, will you slay a righteous nation also? Did he not say to me, 'She is my sister'? And she herself said, 'He is my brother.' In the integrity of my heart and innocence of my hands, I have done this." And God said to him in a dream, "Yes, I know that you did this in the integrity of your heart, for I also withheld you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. Now, therefore, restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you shall live. But if you do not restore her, know that you shall surely die, you and all who are yours." So Abimelech arose early in the morning, called all of his servants, and told all these things in the hearing of the men, who were very much afraid. And Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, "What have you done to us? How have I offended you that you have brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? You have done deeds to me that ought not to be done." And Abimelech said to Abraham, What did you have in view that you have done this thing?" And Abraham said, "Because I thought, surely the fear of the Lord is not in this place, and they will kill me on account of my wife. But indeed, listen, she is truly my sister. She is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. She is, and she became my wife." So let's just stop there, not finish the entire chapter here. What was the problem here? He had a lack of faith in God's promises to make sure that they would have that family. Remember, God promised them that they were going to that he would be the father of great multitudes of people. He hadn't even given it a chance yet for God to make sure that this great multitude, this family, was going to take place. In fact, if you remember correctly, when this promise was renewed, what did Sarah do? Laughed within herself. Why? "I'm too old to bear children." But the failure was the lack of faith in God to follow through. So what did he do? He tried to take it upon himself. "Well, if I tell them this, then surely they'll put me to death." Where's your faith in God? So what my point is here is even Abraham at times had a weak faith, but what did he do ultimately? He overcame that. Well, folks, we can overcome. When we have our faith tested, we can still be victorious. We don't have to succumb to the point of letting it defeat us. We can be victorious. We can win. I think my time is about out. I still have two good points to be talking about here, but I'm kind of out of time.